Hello, family and friends. This is the last episode of three with my Aunt Maureen, and my favorite. In this episode, my aunt speaks to life-changing choices, what brings her joy, and how proud she is of her kids. I want to thank her again for being so open and honest. I truly cherished our time together and learned so much from the stories she shared. This episode was recorded on December 20th, 2021, and I'm going to go ahead and title this episode Pride and Joy. Thanks for listening. So my next series of questions are from Annie. One of her questions was, what do you think is the most life-changing experience you lived through so far?
I would have to say the most life-changing experience, a life-altering experience, would be the death of my dad.
Okay. Why would you say that experience?
Because it radically changed our family. Nothing was the same after that. I had mentioned earlier that I didn't really bond well with mom as a kid, and I remember thinking before my dad died, well, what if one of my parents died? And the one thing I was thinking is, oh, that would be terrible, but it would be more terrible if my dad died than if my mom died. But on the other hand, I'm a girl, and there's going to come a time when I will need things that I don't want to ask my dad about.
Yeah.
So in that sense, you know, it'd be better to have my mom around, but who do I feel emotionally safer with? It was probably dad. So, and now I was alone with this person that I didn't feel emotionally safe with as a parent. And she had been an at-home parent all of her life, short of the paper route fiasco, which wasn't a fiasco to her, but for us kids it was, for Mike and I anyway. So she didn't have any skills or any understanding, so she was totally traumatized. My dad was very young. He was 36 years old and my mom was 34 when he died unexpectedly. So she was completely and utterly unequipped to deal with four children between the ages of 14 and one, and no job skills, and on her own. So she grieved a lot, she was angry a lot, and in all that, she made some choices that were considerably different than how we were raised. I mean, when we were your pretty typical Catholic family.
Yeah.
And I remember when some family friends of ours had a daughter who ran away from home and was found playing the guitar at Seattle Center with a bunch of hippies. My parents gathering us kids together, you know, primarily Mike and I, because Pook and Jamie were too little to comprehend such a thing, but talking to us about, you know, what had happened and to never do these things. And now dad was gone, and my mother was lost, and she had friends that were wild friends. I mean, they were good friends of hers and my dad's beforehand, but they were still kind of zany, outrageous type of people. And now mom was free to be as zany and outrageous as anyone could want to be. She had no job skills, so she started going to Edmonds Community College. She worked nights at a tavern to earn some money, and then during the day she went to Edmonds Community College. And so as a student at Edmonds Community College, she herself became introduced to the dangers of marijuana and this and that, and she started smoking it. So now all of a sudden, my mom is smoking pot, and there's these arguments between my brother and my mother about him finding her pot and stealing it, you know, and life was just too weird for me.
Yeah.
I could not get my head around how crazy this life was. And Mike and my mother were not getting along at all, and he was running away from home. He was hardly ever there, and when he was there, he was making really bad choices.
Yeah.
And I don't believe he ever went to school past the eighth grade. I don't think he even finished the eighth grade. And mom was gone, and I had a sibling that was six and a sibling that was a year and a half old. And I was 13, old enough to babysit. And so my life became primarily the housewife. Not the happy housewife, but...
But you're a kid.
But I was the one who needed to put dinner on the table and take care of these kids.
That answer completely makes sense, because your whole life was basically uprooted and different.
Yeah.
With the loss of your father.
Is there a single choice that you've ever made in your life that had a much bigger impact than you thought it would? And would you have done anything differently?
So the answer to that is yes. And moving to Georgia had some unexpected impacts. And it was both the worst and the best decision I made. And would I do anything different? I might, because I had foresight. But if I didn't have foresight, I don't know that I would. So the best of me moving to Georgia, it was my getting my feet behind my ideals of I wanted to be a person out there doing something, making a difference, and doing brave things. The idea of just being the hamster in the wheel to just keep running and running and running and doing the same thing every day was appalling to me. I couldn't really get enthusiastic about that whatsoever. I had also felt like I had heard the Lord speak to me on a couple of occasions that when Phil started church, that I was to go along and help plant that church. But I was thinking Woodinville.
Not Georgia.
Not Georgia. So I had kind of kept that to myself because Phil was my kids' pastor, and neither one of my kids were real excited about me as teenagers. So, you know, there was just kind of a peculiar dynamic there. And then me being a vigilant mom that I was, and I was very vigilant and intentional about everything with my kids to the best of my ability. If my kids were saying something to me and I gave some pushback on what I was hearing or seeing out of them, and they said, but Phil or the church, then of course I would call the church and say, hey, we need to talk.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, what's this that I'm hearing? So I had called Phil to task on a couple of occasions because of things that I was hearing back from my kids. And so my kids' perspective would be exactly what Annie had responded when I did tell her that I was thinking that. So I had kind of kept this to myself for months, that I had felt, you know, maybe even as much as a year, that I had felt impressed that when Phil goes to start his own church, go along. But then just out of the blue, on a Thursday night, I had come home from pulling up in the driveway with Annie, and I just told her, I said, I just feel impressed that if Phil starts a church, to go along with it. And her response was exactly what I would expect. Mom, what makes you think he would want you? And I just kind of looked at her and just, you know, just kind of shook my head. I said, you don't think pastors get a choice? I think they get what they get. They don't choose who's in their church.
Yeah.
And so anyway, it just happened also that very next Sunday, two things collided together. One, Annie was in trouble. And when Annie was being disciplined by me at that age, it was that she didn't get to go to youth group, because that's the thing that she really enjoyed. And that was the thing that would modify her behavior, is the idea of not getting to participate. Few things modified her behavior at that age of her life, but that one did. So she was on restriction from her youth group with me, so sitting next to me on Sunday. And the pastor, Chris, announced that Phil and Emily had made a decision to plant their own church. So Annie's sitting right next to me, and all of a sudden they made a decision that Phil and Emily are going to plant a church. And I'm like curious as to where, and still thinking Woodinville perhaps. And they said they're going to move to Atlanta, Georgia. And I was just like totally not expecting that.
Yeah.
And I looked over to Annie and I said, I'm not going to Georgia. And then Annie turned to the contrarian and wouldn't let me hear a bit of the service thereafter. She was just so annoying.
Did she just keep talking?
She's like, what do you mean, Mom? If you feel like God is telling you that you're going, then how could you sit there and say you're not going to Georgia? And she was just barking at me the whole time about how dare you say that you think God is leading and then you're saying, I'm not going to Georgia.
Yeah.
Now, when I said I'm not going to Georgia, that wasn't a final type thing, but it was just kind of like, okay, I wasn't hearing from God on that one. It was a quick dismissal, of which I would have and did pray on and consider more thereafter. But she immediately, after the service was over, went running up to Pastor Phil and said, guess what? We're going with you to Georgia.
Oh, wow. So she was in for it.
She was in. She yeah. was all in for that point. So, but, you know, I did go after church and I did tell Chris, I said, you know, this is kind of what's been on my heart and I would like you to pray on that with me. And he says, well, to be honest with you, Maureen, I don't want to see you leave this church. So I'm not excited about that prospect, but I will pray. And so just a lot of thought and prayer. That was in June and I did not make a decision that I was going until late August. And some of the other things that were going on in my life at that time is that Jeff was living with us, and it was clear now that Jeff had schizophrenia. And I knew he had to leave the house, but it also broke my heart to tell him to go, because yeah. I didn't know he didn't have any place to go. So that was a really emotionally difficult bind I was in, because I knew it was not healthy. It was potentially dangerous for Tim and Annie to have him there. And yet, the one thing that just rips me up more than anything is seeing or doing something that might really deeply hurt another individual. So I was kind of in a rock and a hard place with that. I would have to make a very difficult choice. And then Tim had been home from college for some time, but he was not doing anything with himself. And I would be pushing him to look for work, and he would scream back, there are no jobs out there. This is 2008 and we're in the recession.
Oh yeah.
So some things were going on in the home that were difficult, and those things didn't make me want to go to Georgia. The thing that made me want to go to Georgia was that I felt like if I didn't go, then I was missing out on a chance to have the life I wanted to have, mm-hmm. the life of making a difference and doing the radical thing to have an impact and a meaning to my life that I didn't really feel was there. So eventually, after a lot of prayer, decided to go, and I did ask a number of people to pray on me, to pray over it, people who I trusted their ability to hear God and that there was evidence in their life, because I know that hearing God is a is a challenging thing, that many people believe that they are hearing from God and God is saying this or that, but those things don't really line up with Scripture. The fruit in their life are not showing that these things are right. So there is probably more people who get it wrong than people who get it right. And I would have to say, even in my own life, there's a lot of times when I've gotten it wrong and I thought it was right. So there's big, big opportunity for error there, misjudgment. So, but I had gone to people who I really trusted, and three people in particular who I really trusted, and these three people all came back with the same answer, that I hate it. And, but all were consistent in the same answer, and they did not talk with one another. So that in itself speaks pretty loudly. But all of them said, Maureen, I've prayed about it, and I just feel like the Lord is just saying that He's pleased with you and He loves you, and you can stay or you can go. It's your choice.
Oh.
And I'm like, I want the better choice. If that's the choice, my choice is I want the one that's a better option.
Yeah.
And nobody, God wouldn't speak that to me, and He wouldn't speak that through anybody else. There was no better option. They were equal in His eyes. And I hated that part of
it. Yeah.
So I finally said, okay, well, there were some barriers with regard to financial and different things that were going on with my job in Georgia, being able to support a house in Washington, because I had decided that even if I did go, I wasn't going to sell my house. And yet my Georgia wages probably wouldn't pay the Washington house payment.
Yeah.
So there was that barrier to get over. So I finally just said, okay, God, if it's all about me, if it's just what I want to do, what I want to do is I want to go to Georgia and I want to keep my house. And that was on a Sunday afternoon while I was out gardening. And I get in my car on Monday morning to go to work, and I'm not even really out of the cul-de-sac yet. And I hear this advertisement that I've never heard before on the radio that says that 2.75% APR on a refinance on your home. Now, this is in a day when 4.75 is an awesome percentage rate. And I have lived during the days when many people were mortgages were 14 and 11%. So 4.75 was awesome. Our mortgage was 4.9, and that was still an excellent rate. And 2.75 was absolutely unheard of. It was an unbelievable figure. But I had to, like, this is just too bizarre that I said this prayer, and let me see what, if this is one, if this is real, and two, if I would qualify, and three, what would that do to my mortgage payment? And is this God answering my, if this is what you want, I'm going to give you what you want. And so I got to work, and as soon as I arrived, I'm like dialing this number because I had memorized it on there. And this lady, and I said, okay, I heard this advertisement, and I want to know if I would, what would it take to find out if I would qualify, and is this real, and how? And she goes, oh, okay. She goes, yeah, it would only take us 10 minutes to tell you if you qualify or not. And I'm thinking, this is just too weird. 10 minutes? Really? A big decision like this? And so she takes some information. She goes, yep, absolutely, you do qualify. And this is what your payments would be. And the payment dropped my house payment $300 a month. So now my house was affordable for me to rent it out while I went to Georgia. So that's how that decision came about, between the conversation between me and God. What I didn't foresee, I had told Tim over and over again, you know, you're welcome to come along, but he said he was not. Tim is like me, and that he doesn't really, he's not comfortable being open about his heart with many people. And at some point, I think while I was going to college, when he was in junior high, that there we were very close, very, very close when he was little. But we had grown apart some, and he did not feel safe with me. And I was not able to, had not yet been able to recapture that back with him. And so he was just like, no, I'm not going. I'm not going. And I made the decision when I got an apartment down there to get a 3-bedroom apartment just in case he changed his mind so we could accommodate him. And he didn't change his mind. But I hurt so bad for him with me going. He was 21 years old, but it just broke my heart to go without him and to leave him alone in a house. He had a month to stay there till the renters came in with no idea where he was going or how he was going to figure that out. And it ate me up. And I just still have not been able to get over the fact that that must have been a very traumatic thing for him. So that part of me going to Georgia is absolutely regrettable. And then the loss of the family dynamic for the extended family, it has never been the same since I got back.
Yeah.
Since I left. And that really makes me sad.
That's really hard. Did you feel like from the Georgia, were you able to get those needs met though for like what you kind of set your heart out to go?
Georgia was a very interesting experience. So as far as the church is concerned and participating in the church plant, it was very hard and very wonderful. I had to grow up and face some things in myself that were good for me to see and face. And I, you know, even in the midst of me having to come to grips with some things about who Maureen was, both as a mom of this wild child, Annie, and as a Christian, I was so loved and included as a core part of the family, of the church and of Phil. And that was wonderful. And I did make a difference in people's lives. There are a number of friends that I have that are 20 to 30 year olds, more 30s now because we're older, that I really cherish. And I believe, and I know that I'm really cherished by those people because of the choices that are made there. So it was, for me, my own personal experience, it was wonderful. It was good in that it made me grow up in certain ways, and it was good in that I made a difference, that I created value to my own existence by impacting others for the good.
Yeah, because it takes a strong person to make that kind of decision.
Yeah.
Here's a question that I really like to ask. What are you most proud of in your life?
This is one of the questions you had sent me in advance for me to look at, and I kind of labored over this thought for a day or two, and I finally found this place that I felt like, yes, this is it, and this is. When somebody says what I am most proud of, what I can say I'm most proud of about my life isn't much about me. There is a piece about me, but it isn't mostly about me. But I think the thing that makes me the proudest in my life is the decisions that my daughter Annie has made, from being a rebellious and arrogant child and young lady to being a serious student on how to do life well.
I am so proud of her. I can't even believe it. So when I worked for Dr. Cantini for 7.5 years there in Seattle, I had this young woman work for me by the name of Melanie. And this is during Annie's height of her wild days. And she would say to me, I was just like her. And Melanie was such a responsible woman and such a delight. I'm like, I can't even fathom that, Melanie. And Melanie was young. She was in her early 20s. And I would say, I can't even fathom you being like this. But that you say that you are, and I will accept that you are being honest with me about that. It gives me such great hope.
Yeah.
That the sign might be true for my daughter, and it is true for my daughter. And another thing in my life that I am very proud of is, and I've always been proud of, and it's never faltered, although there have been moments where the evidence would be to the contrary, but I've always been proud of Tim because of his heart. Tim does not verbalize warmth, or he doesn't verbalize care, but everything about him is do no harm. There is nothing Tim has ever done in his life that would cause another person harm, that would hurt another person. It's just core of who he is, to do no harm. And he would tell you that he recognizes in himself a rage similar to what John felt frequently and didn't hesitate to express. But Tim is just a good man. Another thing that I'm very proud of is who Aaron and Jeff are. Aaron and Jeff, one time, you might find this funny. I didn't find it funny at all at the time, nor could I relate with how they could even come up with that at the time. But in hindsight, I see it. But they were watching a cartoon, and they were snickering and laughing. And somehow I picked up on the idea that I was the subject of of their humor. And so as it turns out that they were watching like Yosemite Sam, who had this wild temper and just kind of get all jacked up or whatever. And they had this joke between them that was me. And I was like, you gotta be kidding, because I did not have any self-image that showed me as a person that got all jacked up with anger or rage or anything. My self-perception was that I was a very, very calm person and not easily upset, that I had, you know, strong values and strong opinions and those sorts of things, but I could not relate with a person who, as being a person who like went off. And so they had that joke between them, and they did not like me as a stepmother. I think they liked me as a person, but they didn't like me as a stepmother. But as both of them got older, even earlier for Jeff than Aaron, but Jeff as an adult would tell me, yeah, Maureen, you got the ugly job of being the only parent who really cared to bring us up to be healthy adults. You were hated for that, but you took the job and you did it, and I'm really grateful. And Jeff would tell me all the time as a young man how he appreciated that I was in their life, and I'm really proud of him for being able to say that and to do that. And I also am very proud of who the real Jeff is. So there are two Johns, and there's two Jeffs, and there are two moms. There is the core person of who they are inside, who God created them to be, and that's the better them.
And then there is the person that has been damaged and broken and is in a state of reaction or knee-jerk reaction to what life has done to them. And they all had, and myself as well, dysfunction because of the circumstances of life. But when you had moments to really sit down and to talk with and get to know who that person really was, there's so much good there. And Jeff is a very, very caring individual, and he's a very sensitive individual and very deep, emotionally deep. And there's just a lot of substance there. Aaron, on the other hand, was not a person that you sit down and have those deep philosophical questions. But Aaron too, I'm very proud of the fact that if anybody in our family cares about family, I'm saying the Millers, if anybody in the family cares about family as much as I do, it's Aaron. Aaron will go out of his way to let me know that I am family and I am valued. And he has installed that in his own children, that family first. And I'm very proud of him there. And he has persevered to do the right thing, the best thing for his family throughout his life. And relieved to be able to say that he too has said to me that as a teenager he could not stand me, but as an adult he would call me his hero, that there is nobody who's had a more profound impact for the good on his life and who forms who he is as a person than me. So those are things that I really cherish. As far as what about Maureen? What is it about me that I really like? And what I really like is the about me, or I'm proudest about me, is the same thing that makes me so controversial, and that is that I am compelled, even if I know the terrible way it will be received or whatever, if I feel like there's something valuable to be said to somebody, that something that they really need to hear and know, I will say it. And I do believe that I almost always say it kindly and with respect, but if I think somebody really needs to hear something, I feel like for me not to say it is for me to harm them. So there is a place in Scripture, a prophet by the name of Ezekiel, who, of all the prophets, Ezekiel is definitely the most controversial. And there is not much I understand about Ezekiel. But I do understand this one calling that God put on him, and it's the calling of the watchman. And I have that same moral obligation. I don't know if God put it on me or I put it on me. But the calling of the watchman, when God called Ezekiel to this, was he had said in a paraphrase of this is, and the story is in Ezekiel 3:16-22, if somebody wanted to look it up. But God said to Ezekiel, when you see somebody sinning, you need to tell them that it is sin. And if you do not, then you are as responsible as them for that. But if you tell them that this is sin and they choose not to repent, then they will still have their consequences, but you will not. And I just have this sense that we're not taking care of one another if we are ignoring where somebody might be making a decision, somebody has a blind side, and they're not really seeing something, or they're harming themselves, Now, I don't expect that people will listen to me or anything else, but I do, even if they're not going to like the fact that I said this, I do feel like I have a responsibility. And even as a business manager, I felt that way. There have been times when I have done a job interview with somebody, and something about this person just touches me, that I know that they're trying hard or they want this, but they have this significant flaw that they just can't see, and they're not going to get anywhere until they see this flaw. That when I've called them back and said, you know, I'm sorry, but I've made a decision to hire another candidate. But if you wouldn't mind me giving you some feedback, this here impacted my decision, and if you could change that, it might make a big difference for you going forward.
Do they appreciate that feedback?
Always.
Okay, that's good. This shows a lot of growth, though, too. Like, talking about your younger self, you were so introverted. So even though you might still see yourself as introverted, you're able to say things that might be hard for other people to say.
I'm still at times intensely uncomfortable and insecure, but it depends on my place in that scene.
Yeah.
So if I have an assigned role, then I'm totally fine functioning in that role. If I'm just like in a scene and I don't really have a place where I belong or a role, then I feel awkward.
Well, I will go to you when I need truth.
I really like this question as well. What is something that brings you joy?
That's really a tough thing because I'm not known for joy. That's why I need the Ricks and the Johns and the Annies and I need the outrageous and the silly in my life to level me out, because I just don't have a silly part of me.
Yeah.
And even when I try to be silly or fun, people don't get it.
But then that could be something that gives you joy, or those people.
Yeah.
Being able to bring that out.
Yeah. So where I have felt most alive in my life is with John, where I just felt so at home. And he, of course, he was always silly and way too silly for me, and that usually annoyed me, but also endeared me to him too. So, you know, he would say some of the most ridiculous things to me. He would say, "Maureen, you're my monkey girl." I'm like, "What? I am nobody's monkey girl." And he would persevere and put his arm to me, "Oh, you're my monkey girl." I said, "Knock it off. I'm not anybody's monkey girl." And he just wouldn't quit. And eventually I would laugh. And he knew that. So just the comfort there, that in that relationship, I could be my plain-spoken self and serious self. But it was just home. It was just home in my heart. My kids are everything to me. My success and my failure in life will be determined by their final view on whether they valued the impact that I had on them. So I don't, you know, I know that Annie does. Annie does now, because Annie is comfortable speaking her heart to me. And, you know, Annie is kind of like her dad in that they fear nothing, say anything, or have been outrageous. And because I have an aura that I hear back from people. I don't intend to project this, but I've heard it back from so many people so many times that it has to be true, that there is a piece of me that intimidates other people. So that must be true, although I never intend to be intimidating. I don't see myself that way at all. but I have that affect, and they're just not at all going to sense that or be driven by that, and they're just bold, and they'll come in and knock and push, and as they have come in and knocked and pushed, they've gotten to know that I am safe.
Yeah.
Where other people don't know that I'm safe, they know that I'm safe because they have done everything they can to push me to the point where what somebody else might fear, I would definitely do.
Yeah.
But have discovered that I don't do. that suspicion that they have there is unfounded. So I suppose I probably have joy in the last couple of years with my mom, living with her. There were certainly times that I didn't have, I was enraged. Yeah. And that's probably where I came to the place where I just had to recognize and settle that there was a piece of me that would get enraged and express rage and tame that beast, because she wouldn't cooperate with the things that were good for her. And I knew the outcome of those choices would be so devastating, and it was just infuriating for me. But I had to come to the place where I was okay with her making bad choices for herself, that I was going to respect that freedom and just let her enjoy whatever it was that she was going to do or not do for herself. I don't know that you know this, but I had made, you probably don't, I had made a vow in my heart many years prior that I was going to take care of Mom. And we weren't getting along then, but we didn't get along well in life. But my mom had this amazing quality, which I always really respected in her. She was so mistreated by her mother, in more of a sense of negligence than abuse. Her mom was not abusive to her in any way, shape, or form, but she was very negligent of caring for my mom emotionally. And my grandmother on my dad's side was abusive to her. My mom was never loved well by the adults in her life, but she never once didn't do right by them.
Yeah.
She was never less than a loyal daughter to her mother, and she was never less than a loyal daughter-in-law to my grandmother on my dad's side. And she never quit approaching both of them with the absence of an assumption that all is well.
Yeah.
I had so much respect for her about that. And when my mom's mom grew old and lonely, she didn't need help physically so much. She had all those, the pieces in place to take care of her physical well-being and such, but she was lonely, and she had children in the same town that mom was one of six, and that were there but weren't really connecting with her. Now, a couple of those had died, but they're, you know, the people in town were not taking care of her. My grandmother on my mom's side had 36 the last time I counted grandchildren, so lots of grandchildren.
Yeah.
And those people were not feeling the loneliness that that Mamie, my mom's mother, her name was Amy, but all the grandkids called her Mamie. She was lonely, and every time she said, "I'm lonely," my mom dropped everything and went and kept her company. And so I had said back then, I don't know what year that Mamie died, but I had said in those last couple of years that Mamie was alive that the one thing Mom did really well in life was take care of those who didn't deserve to be taken good care of in her life. And I was going to take care of her. Make sure that she had gotten back what she had given.
You did a good job.
Thank you.
I appreciate you being there. Is there anything else you would want to bring up or speak to that wasn't spoken to?
I don't think there's anything else about my past that I would want to speak to other than how much I loved being Aunt Maureen. I love you, honey.
I love you too.